Dr. Oglase is in studio with us today to talk about communicable diseases on the heels of the fact that the whole world is paying attention to the quote-unquote coronavirus, which has now surpassed the amount of cases that SARS had several years ago in China. Three confirmed cases in Canada, and there's a number of other countries around the world who have people who have confirmed cases. But there's much more to this story, and I thought the best person to talk to is somebody who spends a whole bunch of time worrying about keeping everybody healthy, especially when it comes to diseases that can be spread from person to person. So welcome to the show, Dr. Oglase.
Good morning.
You know, when you hear numbers like what's happening in China, and when you hear and see the spread happening, it's got to be concerning for all public health officials, even if the chances are extremely low, as I believe we have in this area right now. I'm sure there's nobody with coronavirus in Belleville right now.
That's correct, yes.
But as the public health official for hundreds of thousands of people, which you are, it's something you definitely have to pay attention to.
Absolutely. It is very concerning. We are watching the situation very closely and are also working locally to prepare ourselves for this eventuality that we might have a local case. At this point, the risk for individuals in Ontario and specifically in our area remains low. The majority of cases, vast majority of cases, are in China. And we, even though we do see some international cases in different countries, that is still very low numbers compared to what's happening in China. Having said that, we have systems in place to ensure that anyone who is a returning traveler from a risk area will be screened at the airport, will be provided information what to do should they develop symptoms. And if they do develop symptoms, they will be contacting public health. They might be presenting to the emergency department, and we will be prepared. We are prepared to then put all the precautions in place and order testing to confirm whether that's in fact the infection with the novel coronavirus.
Are you in contact with Quinny Healthcare? And we know that they have a reverse oxygen or reverse air treatment rooms, right?
Yes, so that's called negative pressure rooms.
So they are prepared to deal with somebody. Like if you come in and say, hey, I just got back from China and I feel terrible, they're not going to make you sit in the lobby. They're going to put you in that room straight away and find out what's going on. There's no lollygagging here because this is a potential big issue.
Yes, so that initial screening occurs at any level of healthcare. Certainly, Quinty Healthcare is conducting that as well. We are asking patients or people who might be presenting with symptoms with a history of travel to indicate to the staff when they have the first contact with staff at Quinty Healthcare to identify that they have been returning travelers, but they will be also asked the question. The same questions are asked when people are calling 911. So when paramedics arrive, they also are prepared to respond and have appropriate personal protective equipment and transport that individual to the place where they can receive care.
SARS was a coronavirus. Explain what a coronavirus is.
Yes, coronavirus is actually it's a term for a large family of viruses. It's called coronavirus because when you look at the electron microscopy, it kind of looks like there's a crown around it. So it is.
So it has nothing to do with the Mexican beer.
No.
Okay.
No.
I knew that would throw you off.
Oh,
a little
certainly
bit.
It did. So that's how we named this class of viruses. The vast majority of these viruses are affecting animals, so they're not really a human pathogen. However, we do have coronaviruses. They're not novel; just regular coronaviruses circulating in our pool of respiratory viruses every cold and flu season. So about 10 to 15% of regular colds could be due to a regular known coronavirus.
Yeah.
So that's part is what is known and established. And from time to time, you get these. You got that once in 2003 when you got that transmission from animal to person and then person to person, which was SARS. And that's something that didn't really spread very easily person to person. So right now, we don't have any cases of SARS since 2003. We haven't had any cases. But again, it's still that virus still persists in the animal population. The other coronavirus that we have and monitor is MERS, which is it's a coronavirus that has a reservoir in camels, Middle Eastern coronavirus, and that's the one that has person-to-person transmission. We are looking at it, but we don't really see it here. We are screening, asking questions, travel questions. Someone presents with the symptoms. And again, because there's a reservoir in the animal world that people have contact, that's something that may present. And now we have this another coronavirus, a novel one.
So when you say novel, what do you mean?
Novel meaning that this was not previously identified in humans. It's the one that basically jumped from the animal world to the human population. So we call it NCOV, novel coronavirus. That's the working name for this okay. pathogen right now, and that's the one that was initially in the sort of the epicenter for this condition is it was the city of Wuhan. There was a seafood market that's the area where we believe that there was some transmission occurring there, and that's where these first human cases were discovered with connection to that market. Since then, we've seen a progression of this disease. So now we know that there's person-to-person transmission happening in China, and we also know that there is some person-to-person transmission happening outside of China. I think the first reports were coming from Germany just today. We had one case there, and now we have four, which means three people, additional people were infected.
I mean, initially it was snakes. Ted and I were talking about the snakes, but now scientists are more apt to believe it was probably bat transmitted to another animal in that market where they had a whole bunch of crazy wackadoodle animals for sale for whatever reason. Or how does something go from an animal to a human? Would it be the same way that a human would give it to another human? So, you know, if my dog has, God forbid, you know, kennel cough or heartworm, I'm probably not going to get it, right? But dogs and all animals breathe, right? So is it the same way, you know, that you would get it? How does it get from animal to human?
So that's what also comes another issue of genetic changes, that the mutations that take place with viral replication. So what I mean by that is basically what a virus is just a piece of genetic material, RNA in this case, which invades cells and then replicates itself. But it does so in a very sloppy way. So the copies of the virus are not exactly what the original virus was. So there might be some changes. And these changes, that's what we call mutations, these changes change the characteristics of a virus in a way that it's now other species are susceptible to it.
So viruses are smart.
It's
and not Einstein smart, but I want to continue existing smart, so
yes.
I will change.
Yes, exactly. So I mean, I don't know whether there's any design behind it and sort of in the sort of philosophical terms discuss about the smart or not smart. But what happens with this type of organism, it's not even organisms, again, it's a piece of genetic material, that it what it wants to do is to replicate. And in doing so, it also does it in a sloppy way that it changes, which then may increase or decrease the chances of replication. So again, the selective pressure is such that if it increases the chances of replication, that genetic mutation will then continue.
But how does that piece of genetic material, the virus, get from a bat to a human being?
So again, there's different modes of transmission. If it's a respiratory virus, it could be through the bodily fluids, could be through this saliva or other bodily fluids, could be from sometimes the transmission occurs with through blood. Like there's many different ways.
Yeah.
It could be again a variety of different reasons. Again, anytime you have a close proximity of humans and animals and a lot of volume of contacts, there's more likelihood. Because let's say if we had a virus, novel virus or virus in a population here, we may not have enough people around the animals to kind of make this likely to happen. But we have a situation when you have a market, when there's a lot of animals, high yeah. density of animals, and a lot of people visit that place. That increases the chances of transmission.
It's coming up to 19 minutes after 10 o'clock. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about what the symptoms are of this particular virus, and we'll also get to this question of masks. The first thing that everybody seems to do is buy surgical masks, yet I don't think it makes much of a difference in this particular case or most particular cases. And we'll certainly get some information of what we all should do, and I bet you it involves soap and water. We'll take a break as we continue talking about communicable diseases with Dr. Peter Oplaza, Chief Medical Officer of Hastings Prince Edward Public Health.
The Lauren Brooker Show on 800-CJBQ returns in moments.
When you think of Moira Glass, you might just think windows and mirrors. But Moira Glass can redefine your home inside out. Get a frameless glass shower enclosure or a full tub enclosure with custom-designed mirrors, all at Moira Glass Mirror. Moira Glass can even install new glass in your fireplace door, windows, mirrors, and beyond. Moira Glass Mirror, Pinnacle Street, downtown Belleville. Look for the van on the roof. Online at MoiraGlass.com. Clearly the best.
Welcome to the world of Merrill House.
Picton's 1878 Gothic Revival Mansion is now home to a luxury boutique hotel, restaurant, and state-of-the-art cellar. Join owner and creative director Jordan, wine director Astrid, and Life Olé magazine for their weekly cellar tasting salon, Tuesdays at 3 o'clock.
Enjoy the magnificence your region has to offer. Book your stay and table at merrill-house.com.
Honey? Any idea who ate the last piece of chocolate cake?
It must have been Timmy.
No, it was you. Your dirty fingerprints are all over the fridge.
This could have been avoided with Arnie's Appliances. Get stainless steel Frigidaire appliances with exclusive smudge-proof technology at Arnie's. Easy to clean, reduces smudges and fingerprints.
Oh, should have bought a Frigidaire.
Frigidaire appliances with smudge-proof stainless steel. Frigidaire. Say goodbye to fingerprints. Get yours today at Arnie's Appliances. Pay no taxes at Arnie's Appliances. Tyendinega.
Hey, whoever said you can't sell your house during the winter months? You can with me, Sandra Hussey, sales rep, Exit Realty. Winter buyers are serious buyers. After all, who would be out in the cold searching for a home if they didn't need to be? Your no-obligation home evaluation is fussy and free. Call me, 438-5588. That's Fussy Hussey,
438-5588. SandraHussey.ca.
Hi, my name is Brenda Snyder of Volunteer at Information Quinney. Volunteers are the heartbeat of our community. All the important services, programs, and fantastic events rely on the support of everyday people like you and me. Listen to CJBQ Monday, Wednesday, and Friday mornings at 11:20 to hear about some great volunteer opportunities in your community. We encourage you to get involved, make a difference, and have fun while you're at it. Volunteer at Information Quinney is proudly supported by Quinney's Hometown Radio.
800-CJBQ. The show that's the talk of the town. It's Lauren Brooker on 800-CJBQ.
We're talking about communicable diseases, especially the coronavirus, which is a story that is literally taking the world because people around the world are subject and getting this virus. Of course, our guest in studio, Dr. Peter Oglaza, the Medical Officer of Health, is much more concerned about the flu than he is about the coronavirus, I would suggest. And many more Canadians this year will die from the common flu than will ever have to be concerned about the coronavirus. And so all precautions for health are important, especially the flu, especially this time of year.
Absolutely. We are in the cold and flu season currently right now, and this is something that recurs every year. So we have this recurring epidemic every year with increased number of flu cases, increased number of cold symptoms of common cold and people diagnosed with that. And we also know that certain individuals are at increased risk of influenza, of cold, people with comorbidities, people, older people, younger individuals, children, pregnant women. These are all the groups that we are particularly concerned about when it comes to the flu and cold season.
And so there are thousands of people every year that pass away in Canada from the flu.
Sadly, yes.
Or complications from the flu.
Absolutely. Because the main concern here is that when someone's immune system is not able to fight the virus, they are basically at more risk for complications such as pneumonia. And if it's added to their pre-existing medical conditions, that could lead to poor outcomes. That could lead to even death.
And just a sidebar, we were talking about this on the show yesterday. There's a fairly significant difference between the flu and the cold. This is what I liken to. I liken to the flu, you feel like you've been hit by a freight train, and a cold, you can kind of get your arse out of bed and go to work, and you feel guilty if you don't go to work. Where the flu, you don't care anymore. You're just not going to work. I mean, you are sick with the flu, and the cold is a cold. I mean, you feel like crap, and you whine, especially if you're me, but if you got the flu, you are done. You're out.
Yes, that's a very good analogy. A lot of people have described their experience with flu as being hit by a train, whereas cold is more like playing with the toy train. The thing is, also what the flu does is that you get this sort of set of symptoms that takes you out of functioning in a very short period of time. So you can pinpoint that the time of the day when you know that you got the flu.
That's interesting, because colds tend to build. Oh, I can feel it in my throat, right?
Yes.
And colds typically have that, starts in your head and goes down, yes. And then you start to, but a flu's not like that. You're exactly right. A flu will come in quite quickly.
Yes, exactly. So that's a big difference. That's what may help individuals to differentiate between these two conditions. Ultimately, I mean, with any disease, you could test for that, although testing for flu only occurs in a very specific types of circumstances. If someone is so sick that they are admitted, are in hospital, are in the ICU intensive care unit, they would be the ones tested for the flu. Otherwise, individuals who are not as severely sick, we just
Stay in bed.
Isolate yourself.
Fluids.
Take fluids. If you are experiencing more symptoms, more shortness of breath, seek medical attention.
Yeah. When some of those vital things are affected and you're like, I'm really having trouble breathing, you need to go get some medical attention.
Absolutely, yes.
If you're dying in bed and you don't even want it, you know, when you have the cold, you just want to sit in bed, have a cup of tea and watch TV. But when you have the flu, you don't even care about the TV, right? You just want lights out, leave me alone. I feel like a building has fallen over.
Yeah, and that's the risk when people can, especially people with comorbidities, they can become dehydrated. They can really, really get sick.
Somebody needs to take care of you if you have the flu. Yeah. Okay. So we pointed out, it's always good to mention that flu shots are still available, right?
They are still available. The ideal time to get the flu shot is before the peak of the season, but they're still available. They're still available throughout the whole flu season.
Okay. Back to this coronavirus. Let's talk about how it affects people, because people are hearing the fact that, over 100 people in China have died. But over 5,000, much over 5,000 now, have it. So those numbers are bad, but they're not horrendous. But they're very concerning. And a lot of those people, right, Doc, have had, as you said, comorbidities. There's been something else going wrong.
Yes, that puts them at more risk for dying. So when we look at the cases, when you look at what you're describing is basically a case fatality rate. So you have the disease and how many of those with the disease will die. So we believe that that estimate from China might be sort of exaggerated, because there's probably way more people with the disease that have not been tested.
They just think they have the flu.
That are cold, that have not been tested, and they're not part of that denominator when we calculate the rate.
So what you're saying is everybody's going to know if somebody dies.
Yes.
But there could be thousands and thousands of more people who are sick, or even because this virus really does affect people. I know in Toronto, somebody, the husband's in the hospital, needing acute care, But the wife is at home.
Yes, exactly.
Because she's just kind of sick.
And you might have way more people. So you have reported 5,000 cases or 3,500 cases yesterday, and today is...
It's five, yeah. It's
but the reason why we have this rapid progression of or increase in cases is that as the test results come in, you get the batch of the tests conducted, the test performed, and then you add another 2,000 positives. Whereas, in fact, what can be happening in the community, you have really thousands, potentially thousands of people sick that were never tested. So again, not to downplay the risk or the gravity of situation in China, but we have to look at the numbers and sort of try to interpret what they could possibly mean.
Obviously, you're not a travel expert, but we know that at least, I think it was 18 cities now in China have been shut down, including especially... Wuhan has 11 million people in it, which is it's like combining Toronto and Montreal together, so it's completely shut down. We are hearing stories, British Airways and other airlines. British Airways have now completely canceled flights to the mainland of China. Canadian Airlines of Air Canada has canceled some flights. We know that America has sent planes to pick up people who are stranded, and Canada is discussing it. Is this, in your opinion, just your opinion, somebody follows these kind of things, obviously, is this the right thing to do? Keep people away from China and vice versa? I mean, we got to get our Canadians home, but some people are saying, well, no, let's just leave them there until we figure out what to do. And I don't think that's the right answer either.
So we have a travel advisory issued by Health Canada about advising against non-essential travel to China. So if you can avoid traveling, why go now? That's basically the
It doesn't
bottom
seem
line
like
here.
The best time.
It
to
doesn't
travel.
Seem like a best idea, best time to do that travel. So that's certainly that type of measure I support. There's a reason for that. As far as the sort of traveling restrictions and physical closure of borders, that's something that from the information I have from Public Health Agency of Canada, this is not a measure that's been proven effective. So right now, this is not the situation where we would implement that. When it comes to bringing home Canadians who are stranded in there, it's a philosophical issue. Are we going to help our citizens who are there?
Are very well, most likely not sick.
So this is sort of beyond my area of expertise, but from the ethical perspective, again, if we have the resources, we're able to help. Mm-hmm. Why not do that? But again, these decisions are taking place at the federal level, so that's where the pros and cons are weighted.
How often are you getting updates?
So we get updates daily, or sometimes even more than daily. There's a good resource that I direct people to look at the situation in Ontario. That's the Ministry of Health that has their website, and they update the situation daily at 10:30. It's ontario.ca/coronavirus, and that gets you to the website, to the page that talks about the situation in Ontario, talks about how many presumptive, how many persons under investigations, and also talks about the overall situation in the world. So I recommend that website. We are using it. This is the source of most reliable information and most up-to-date information as we have right now.
So people are scared. And I say for no reason, especially if you're here in the Quinte area, and some people are now being... there's some xenophobia towards Chinese individuals, which is absolute insanity. Their masks are sold out. So let's talk a little bit about how this disease is spread compared with other diseases. And I know there is a number that they use called R0.
Yes.
And that relates to the amount of people that, and I'm sure you're going to correct me because I need to be corrected. But from what I read, it is the amount of people one person can spread it to.
Absolutely.
So the flu, the common flu, is like a 1.5 R number. But the measles is like a 12 to an 18 because it's highly supersonic contagious. Mm-hmm. But we don't know exactly what this one is yet.
So there are some estimates already that place the R0 parameter, which is the number of how many people would be infected from one sick individual.
By the way, are you impressed that I knew that whole
thing? Oh, very impressed.
Thank you very much.
So that number with respect to this novel coronavirus is between 2 and 3. So that is, again, anytime you have a number greater than 1, you know that the disease is going to propagate. So more people are getting infected. Once you get to the R naught below 1, you know that it's going to be eliminated. And if it's 1, then you basically achieve that endemic status. So, you know, some people get better, but then more people are coming in sick, but it's kind of like the number, overall number stays the same.
Yeah.
So what our goal here is to, when you have this virus and it's each individual will infect 2 to 3 people, you want to make sure that you try to reduce that number. You can reduce that number through a variety of means. You can remove people from being susceptible by vaccination, but we don't have a vaccine for this one. So what we can do here is try to reduce the likelihood of one person infecting these 2 to 3 individuals. So if someone is sick, and that goes for anything, influenza, cold virus, if you're sick, stay home. Don't go to work. Don't infect others if you can avoid it. I mean, there's some situations where it's impossible, but I fully understand that. But that would be ideal situation. The other one is when you're coughing or sneezing, do so in your sleeve. So cough into your elbow kind of to eliminate the spread. And the third thing is, because these viruses are also spreading through the physical objects such as doorknobs. So somebody's sneezing or not covering their mouth with the elbow, but sneezing into their hand, and they're touching the doorknob. Then you are touching the doorknob, and you're touching your eye or any mucous membrane there, and you get infected. So hand washing, soap and water, or alcohol-based hand sanitizer, these are the three elements. So self-isolation, avoiding contact with others who are sick, maintaining hand hygiene, and proper cough and sneeze etiquette. These are the three important tools in how we can prevent this any kind of respiratory virus from spreading.
I was reading the other day, it was another medical officer somewhere saying that, listen, if you can wash your hands on a fairly regular basis and try to mentally avoid touching your face, which we all rub our eyes and things, that is a huge way to help stopping even getting the cold, right? It's something that we don't do enough. But if you can try to not touch your face, that's a big deal.
Yes, absolutely. This is washing your hands before you're eating, not touching your face, trying to avoid rubbing the eyes, using hand sanitizer, washing hands. These are very important elements. And if we had this types of behaviors all across the population, that R naught number would not look like 2 to 3, possibly. It could be lowered. Mm-hmm. So that's what the hope is, that some of these preventive measures could actually reduce the risk of transmission.
Okay, let's talk about the way this particular virus is transmitted compared to a highly contagious measles virus, for example. This one is fairly, although it still has a number of 3, it's not like the plague. It's not like, the Spanish flu or whatever that killed 100 million people or whatever. This is, and even on the aircraft that the Canadians came on, they're really only concerned about people in a 2-meter kind of diameter around them, which is crazy because maybe they were walking and talked to the pilot or, you know, flight attendants and went to the bathroom and stuff, but that's just me. But it's not as spreadable. So can you explain?
So this there's a variety of factors that goes into that or not. So one is that how much of a dose do you need of a particular virus to infect an individual? Because everyone has if someone has a functioning immune system and they get exposed to a virus, different viruses have different ability to cause infection in an individual. So for some, you need to get a lot in your face, a lot on your mucous membranes to then overwhelm
your... This is disgusting. It's disgusting. Somebody is snotting all over you and you're getting sick.
Mm-hmm. And that's where you have to look at what is the infectious dose. So if that infectious dose required to produce an infection in another individual is high, then, again, it's not as easily spread. Because if you just get a little trace, then you're probably going to, your own immune system is going to take care of that infection before it establishes. So that's one factor. The other factor is this virus spread by easily, how soon it dies after it, it gets on the surface. Mm-hmm. Because if it's very susceptible to drying out and becomes inactivated very quickly, then you're not going to get that transmission from the inanimate object. And the third thing, is it something that is prone to be spread as aerosol? Like, is it airborne, like measles, or is it droplet? So for airborne pathogens, when you look at the measles or varicella, things like that, once an individual is in the room, we assume that the viral particles all over the volume.
Because they're breathing.
And that's how this virus gets into the air. Whereas for droplet, it means that only if I'm within 2 meters and I'm coughing, sneezing, talking to you, and I'm spitting out miniature droplets in your direction, that's how you can get it.
Okay, I've lost my appetite. Ted, you losing your appetite?
Yeah.
Thank you. Good weight loss plan. And that's what they think this virus is. It's more droplet.
So we don't know that yet. And that's okay. That's where we don't know that completely. We can assume, we can guess, but we don't have any concrete evidence. We are going with the precautionary principle. So in the face of uncertainty, we want to maintain that high level of precaution. So we assume as if this virus was airborne, and that's why we have the negative pressure rooms. That's why we have all these precautions. But again, we might have that information confirmed.
Well,
in the future.
Certainly the Chinese, and we must have the CDC and our dudes in Winnipeg. They must have some of this virus, do they not? I mean, because I heard that. I mean, even somebody's looking at trying to develop a vaccine at this point. So there must be. Because there's a test for it, so we must know what this virus looks like.
Oh, yes. So there's a test for it that's done, confirmatory test that's done in the National Microbiology Lab in Winnipeg.
In Winnipeg, yeah.
And that's something that if we have a sample tested here just for coronavirus, that big family of viruses, and it comes back positive, then we know, okay, this is presumptive positive. If it has the epidemiological link to travel, then we say it's presumptive positive. We already identified coronavirus. It could be still there. The one of the 10 to 15% regular coronavirus.
Yeah.
That still could be a possibility, but that's why we are sending that sample to National Microbiology Lab in Winnipeg. We're going to actually test if this is the novel type of coronavirus.
So in Belleville or in Sunnybrook, for example, the patient comes in, they test them, they go, oh, yeah, this is a coronavirus. We can see it in the microscope. Then they take that blood sample, send it to Winnipeg where they have this novel one, and they can compare it and then...
Yes, so that's exactly the case. So if we have already someone with the travel history or being linked to someone who is a case of this virus, then with this really high index of suspicion that coronavirus that we detected on that general sample and on that general test is in fact a novel one. But we cannot say 100% until we get that confirmatory test.
And so if somebody in Belleville got sick and they haven't really left their house except to go to a Tim Hortons drive-through in their car... the presumption is that they don't have the novel coronavirus because the odds are a bazillion to one. They haven't spoken to anybody. They haven't been to, you know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
What are the odds?
That's a very good point. And that sort of goes back to the case definition. Case definition, anytime you have an outbreak, anytime you have a novel disease, you have to establish what is the case definition. So someone with a certain set of symptoms, so fever being one of them, mm-hmm. plus other respiratory symptoms, and a history of travel to, right now, Hubei province in China, before we just limited it to the city of Wuhan, but yeah. Now it's the entire province. And anybody with that type of history of travel or a contact with a confirmed case would be even considered for testing.
So somebody working in Toronto in the Air China or a departure lounge or, you know... They're more likely, if they get sick, right, to be considered somebody who may have come in contact with somebody than somebody who is in Winnipeg and has never really left their house. For
yes, absolutely. And even though if someone is in Toronto, someone is in the area that has people who might be travelers, they still wouldn't technically meet the case definition because... again, you have to have a confirmed. The odds are higher, and the public health lab may decide to test.
So then let's talk why everybody's buying masks and what masks actually do, because I think it's when I'm reading from your colleagues in the media, it's just fair common sense, but people are freaking out a little bit. So we'll take a break. 10:42 is the time. As Dr. Oglaz is in studio, we so appreciate his time today. It's always very educational when he comes in, because he looks at healthcare and our safety and health in a macro way, as opposed to maybe your doctor's looking just at you. So we'll take a break. We'll be back.
A new year means it's time for a new look. That calls for a renovation staff. Hi, it's Steve here from Steve Marshman Fine Jewelry and Custom Design. We're excited to offer you incredible savings now through January 31st. The entire store will be up to half off, up to half off. And Forever Expressions, up to 70% off. Save 60% on Navy SEAL watches. Buy one, get one free on stainless steel jewelry. All fine jewelry and silver, up to 70% off. We're renovating to serve you better, and right now, the savings are better than ever with our renovation sale. See us today at Steve Marshman Fine Jewelry and Custom Design, the Somerville Center, your jewelry destination.
Welcome to the world of Merrill House.
It's a staycation that feels 1,000 miles away. Picton's Merrill House. Inspired by his travels of the world, creative director Jordan has reimagined every suite with contemporary art and stately artifacts. Wake up to a gourmet breakfast and savor a 3-course meal in the wine cellar dining room. Ask about the 613 staycation special.
Come and feel a world away. Explore Merrill-House.com.
Live in your home for as long as possible. It's what we all want for ourselves and our loved ones. We at Tender Loving Companion Care are here to help. We provide private home care, making every part of your day and night easier. Tender Loving Companion Care will help with personal care, activities of daily living, as well as palliative care. Call me, Tracy Wright, at Tender Loving Companion Care, because everyone needs a little TLCC. 613-920-3822.
Nature. It's what makes Canada like no other place on Earth. Our forests, waters, mountains, and grasslands are home to precious wildlife, places of awe and exploration, and Canada wouldn't be the same without them. Nature defines Canada, and it's defined our mission for over 50 years. Join us at natureconservancy.ca and protect the land we call home for today and all tomorrows. The Nature Conservancy of Canada. Nature defines us.
The Empire Theatre, downtown Belleville, is honored to present Grammy Award-winning violinist Miri Ben-Ari. Miri Ben-Ari has created a revolutionary fusion of classical and hip-hop, collaborating with artists such as Jay-Z, Alicia Keys, and Kanye West. An evening of electrifying music with Miri Ben-Ari, March 10th. For tickets, call 969-0099 or visit theempiretheatre.com.
Weekdays from 2 to 7, it's Freddie Vest playing your favorites from the 50s and 60s on Quinny's Hometown Radio, 800 CJBQ.
Now, back to Lauren Brooker on 800 CJBQ.
10:46, tomorrow on the program, we are going to talk about Derek Sloan a little bit, who's running for the national leadership. He was on yesterday with Evan Sullivan, Solomon on CTV, and he had some interesting things to say. We'll have some clips, and we'll get to that. Also, history and truth. I think it's important that we know it, but we're going to talk to Richard Hughes. He's the president of the Hastings County Historical Society. There was a deputation at council on Monday to change the name of Myers Pier. Former Moira was going to be named Myers Creek, but that was changed. Statues of Sir John A. Macdonald have been removed, and revisionist history. History is history, and I think we need to remember it. So we'll talk to somebody who actually studies it, and will give us some ideas on what he thinks. And also, we'll find out the real history of Mr. Myers, who was an important, crucial part of the fact that we're all here today, living right here. So that's tomorrow on the show. But right now, we're talking about the coronavirus and communicable diseases with the Medical Officer of Health, Dr. Peter Oglaza. And lots of stories on the news, because this is the most sensational aspect of it, is the huge purchase of surgical masks. When I was in Korea last April, I would say a third of the population wore masks just everywhere. And I think a lot of that is because of pollution and things like that. But the reason people are wearing masks here seems to be because they are scared of getting this disease. yet people like you are saying, you just, this is ridiculous. You don't need to. I mean, stores are out of stock. There's waiting lists to get. I mean, this is something, if we were in Toronto right now, we would see lots of people wearing masks. And even though people like you say you don't need to wear masks, it's not going to make a difference, nobody seems to be listening.
So that's a really good point, because when you're looking at what is surgical mask doing, this is basically something that was designed to keep the surgeon's mouth away from the open patient, so you're not coughing or sneezing into the operating field. For this type of infection, the only purpose for a surgical mask that can see in this situation is if you're sick yourself, if you're cough or sneezing, you're presenting to a healthcare facility, they will be offering, they'll be asking you to put on that surgical mask. So when you're sitting waiting, you're not coughing and you're not spreading the pathogens. And that's for regular colds, flu, and things like that. Like for this particular, if you're suspicious that you might have been traveling to the Hubei province in China, actually you will, in addition to getting that surgical mask, or you'll be put in the negative pressure room. But for anybody else in the community who are concerned about maybe getting sick, first of all, the risk of acquiring this infection would be very low, because again, you would have to be in contact with someone sick. Someone sick would have to be coming from or have a history of travel to China, to Wuhan, to city of Wuhan or Hubei province. So really, for individuals here, not much point in having a surgical mask on. And additionally, when you are really in face to face with someone who is sick, the surgical mask is not protecting you from rubbing on your own eyes and putting a pathogen into your own mucous membranes that you got from a doorknob. Mm-hmm. 5 minutes ago, and it's not also going to protect you from getting the droplets into your eyes, or this is basically perhaps a false sense of security. And individuals would be much better served if they, let's say, invested in alcohol-based hand sanitizer and have that mental discipline of not touching their face. And again, coughing, sneezing,
everything that you tell us to do all the time.
Yes,
just do that. As opposed to thinking that if you get on a bus, you're going to get a disease that, you know, does not exist in our community. And when I say does not exist, anything is possible. But the odds are astronomical that you're going to get sick. And even in Toronto, there's 7 million people in Toronto. The other thing is, doctor, please tell people not to be afraid of Asians. I mean, the fact that this is actually happening in the news and people are going around and not going to certain restaurants or markets or walking across the street. I read a story that people are walking across the street when they see Asians come down the road because they think they're going to get sick. This is lunacy. It's xenophobia. It's racism. It's all that kind of stuff that has nothing to do with the science of this disease.
Yes, it's really frightening, and it's really, really disturbing, concerning that people might have these thoughts. And again, anyone who is traveling, there might be people of different ethnicities that are traveling and returning.
Yeah, there could be a white business guy going to do business in Wuhan, and he gets sick.
So it's really hurting the and also it's also. Potentially undermining the any kind of efforts we may have in containing it, because if there is that type of profiling and targeting of individuals, they might be less likely to actually come forward and present if they have symptoms. So really, this is on many levels, it's absolutely wrong.
There's a lawyer on the news in Toronto yesterday who was scared to cough in public, from the Chinese community in Toronto, who's scared to cough in public. That is simply outrageous. We're better than that. Absolutely. I think as a community, we're just much. We should be much better than that. So, as we are talking about this more, and things may change, we may get somebody with it. Do we ever have anybody with SARS in the area? I know you certainly weren't here at the time, but
I don't remember. I don't recall. What I can tell you in SARS, that was a different situation, different type of a virus that happened to be transmitted more easily in the healthcare setting. So that healthcare setting transmission was much more common than the community transmission. So remains to be seen what this virus will be like and how it gets transmitted, but I'm not aware of the SARS cases here locally.
And of course, we've learned a lot right? We will learn as a global society. The World Health Organization, the CDC, all the groups that focus on diseases on a regular basis, this kind of stuff, will learn from this one. But we've learned a ton since 2003 about dealing with coronaviruses like SARS, right? So we are prepared where we weren't prepared in 2003.
That's absolutely correct. And this type of preparation and change in the processes that we do, it's not something that the general public will see, because we do business very differently in hospitals right now. We have these negative pressure rooms. We have the processes, procedures in place to actually minimize the risk of transmission. So this is something that came out of the experience with SARS, and these processes are in place currently.
And I think from what I can tell anyway, that our healthcare system, so the ministers of health in Ontario and federally, the medical officer of health for Ontario and here, obviously, hospital administrators, they've been very transparent on what they're doing, what's going on, what the numbers are, so the population has information. I'm not sure if you'd agree, but I think you would, that when people don't get information, then they start to freak out, right? The more information you know, maybe the better it is with situations like this.
Certainly. That's one of the principles. One of the lessons is truly you want to be transparent. You need to provide the public with the factual information as well as the how they can protect themselves. Because it serves no good just to basically scare people. You need to provide solutions. And the solution for this one is really, if you have been a returning traveler from the region of Hubei in China and you develop symptoms, call public health, present to the emergency department, let the staff know of that travel history. Everyone who's actually a returning traveler will be receiving the instruction sheet at the border. So, mm-hmm. so that information is already out there. But in addition, for individuals in the community, keep in mind, there are very simple infection prevention control practices that everyone is capable of doing, and they're very simple. They're so simple that we may even forget about them. But washing hands, using hand sanitizer, covering cough or sneeze with the elbow, and not touching your face, these are very simple interventions that would reduce our risk, not only for any novel viruses, but the variety of cold and flu viruses that might be...
It's helpful in general.
Yes.
Okay, as the medical officer of health for this area, do you have any concern about this? I mean, where is this on your concern meter, the coronavirus?
So this is a high concern because this is a growing and developing situation. So we want to be prepared. We want to have everything in place in the situation that we start seeing cases locally. So this is not something that we treat lightly. But again, the actual risk, I would side with with the statements that were made at the ministry level, at the chief MOH level, that say that the risk of to Ontarians is still considered low.
So is it fair to say that when it comes to flu, you know people in this area are going to die from the flu, but when it comes to this coronavirus, I mean, it's highly unlikely that we're going to have serious influx of coronavirus in the Quinte region.
When you look at from the risk perspective, I know that year to year we have deaths from the flu, and this is something that is predictable. It is preventable. We still have work to do on that, but that's something that happens year to year, and this year will be no different. With regards to coronavirus, we may or may not have local cases. Novel coronavirus may or may not have local cases, but overall risk, I still think that right now we might be having flu deaths in our community where there's not even a single case of a novel coronavirus.
Well, I think everybody listening to the show today probably feels much more knowledgeable and comfortable with this new story, and you brought it down to a local level, and we really appreciate it. Of course, we'll all be covering this, and if things change, please come back and keep the communication open so we know.
Thank you very much for having me and the opportunity to share this information with your audience.
Dr. Peter Oglaza, he is the medical officer of health for Hastings Prince Edward Public Health. Big thanks to him. Also, big thanks to all our callers today. It's much appreciated. Tomorrow, we're going to talk about history and our local history with Richard Hughes. He's the president of the Hastings County Historical Society. We'll also get on Derek Sloan a little bit for some comments that he made.